Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, case number 03654. The purpose of this week's proceeding in Charlotte, North Carolina, is twofold. The first purpose of this proceeding is to hear fact and expert testimony concerning the claim brought under the Vaccine Act by Mr. and Mrs. Rolf Hazelhurst on behalf of their now 7-year-old son, Yates. The Hazelhursts have alleged that the vaccinations Yates received within his first year of life caused his gastrointestinal condition and his autism. Consistent with the requirements of the Vaccine Act, this claim has been assigned to me, Special Master Patricia Campbell Smith, to determine whether the Hazelhursts are entitled to compensation under the vaccine program for Yates' injury, and I alone will decide Yates' particular case. While the Hazelhursts are bringing a specific claim on behalf of their son, they have agreed to permit their case to be heard as a test case in the joint proceeding known as the Omnibus Autism Proceeding, or OAP. The OAP is an efficient method of proceeding on the nearly 5,000 individual vaccine claims filed by families on behalf of their children who have autism or a similar condition. The OAP permits the hearing of expert medical and scientific testimony within the context of an actual case that also serves as a test case on the general causation issue of whether routinely administered childhood vaccinations can cause autism. The test case is decided on its particular facts, and the general causation evidence that is heard may be applied later in other specific cases. Because the Hazelhursts have agreed to permit their case to be heard as a test case, the second purpose of this hearing is to hear additional general causation evidence on the first theory of causation asserted by petitioners in the OAP. The first theory of general causation advanced by petitioners is that the combination of thimerosal-containing vaccines and the MMR vaccine can cause autism, and three test cases will be heard on this general causation theory. The first test case was the Cedillo case, which was heard in June of this year. This case, the Hazelhurst case, is the second test case. And the third test case is the Snyder case, which will be heard in just a few weeks in November. Because general causation evidence will be heard in this proceeding that may be applied in later autism cases, my colleagues, Special Master George Hastings and Special Master Denise Bowell, will be present in the general seating area of the courtroom during part of this proceeding. We will commence this proceeding each day at 9 a.m., on Thursday, October 18th, however, we will commence at 10:30 a.m. to accommodate the late-night travel, international travel, of both the respondents' anticipated experts on that day. Each day, we will break an hour for lunch and take 2 15-minute breaks, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. We will adjourn each day at the conclusion of the scheduled testimony. At this time, I remind all to power down your noise-making electronic devices, and we'll commence with brief opening statements from counsel. Petitioner's counsel, please to begin, introducing yourself first for the record.
I am Curtis Webb of Twin Falls, Idaho. Here at counsel table with me are Mr. and Mrs. Hazelhurst, the petitioners in this matter. Mr. Hazelhurst's father is here, as is his sister, who is Ann Girard, one of our witnesses today. Mr. Hazelhurst's mother will also be testifying, but she can't sit for very long because of a medical condition, so she'll be joining us just before her testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Webb, to begin, just a reminder to counsel, there is no podium, so counsel will be presenting and speaking from a counsel table at all times.
That works fine for me. We hope to demonstrate that the thimerosal that Yates Hazelhurst received through his vaccinations and or his February 8, 2001 MMR vaccination caused him to develop progressive autism. Today's testimony will present facts specific to Yates Hazelhurst. The important facts are: Yates developed normally until spring of 2001. Yates received thimerosal-containing vaccines throughout his first year of life and received an MMR Hib, hepatitis B, and Prevnar vaccination on February 8, 2001, just before his first birthday. Yates was sick when he received the vaccinations. he had an ear infection for which he was prescribed amoxicillin. Gates remained sick for about 2 weeks after the vaccination. On February 20, 2001, he developed a rash, fever, and cough, which was reported to his pediatrician. At the time, the pediatrician prescribed another antibiotic. The first symptoms of Yates' autism were less interest in other persons, for example, his parents and his cousins, who were then 6 and 3 years old, and wild behavior, running away from his caregivers as soon as whenever he got a chance. These began in late March or early April 2001. The next symptoms of Yates' autism was self-limiting his diet. This began in early June of 2001. The next symptom of Yates' autism was a change in his speech. He stopped using functional language, please, juice, bye-bye, and things like that, and instead excelled in recognition and reciting numbers and letters. This began in late June and early July of 2001. By early 2002, Yates had stopped speaking at all altogether. By August 2001, Yates's regressive autism also featured pronounced self-stimulatory behaviors, lining toys up, spinning wheels, and hand flapping. There was some of this behavior earlier, as early as June. Yates developed chronic diarrhea in late June or early July. This was during the Norway trip that you'll hear something about. The diarrhea persisted until 2004, when it was treated by Dr. Bowie. Actually, it improved when changes were made in his diet in 2002, and improved again in 2003 when Dr. Bowie first saw Yates, but it really didn't entirely clear up until the parents began using the current regimen of enzymes and medication in 2004. Yates' autism today is characterized by delayed speech, more severely delayed in expression than in reception. By wild behavior, he still will run away if not constantly supervised and inhibited from running away. Limited self-stimulatory behavior, this has been addressed through has been limited through a great deal of therapy over the last years. And a need for medication. If he didn't take medication, he would never sleep. And also medication to limit aggressiveness. We believe that these facts implicate the Marisol and or the MMR vaccination as significant contributing factors in his regressive autism. Tomorrow's testimony will present additional medical evidence for a causal relationship between thimerosal and or the MMR vaccination and Yates' autism. The evidence we present and that previously presented in the Cedillo hearing demonstrate that regressive autism is a result of a genetic predisposition and environmental exposure. That when trying to understand a child's regressive autism, it makes sense to look at environmental exposures temporally associated with the first symptoms or manifestations of the child's autism. The evidence demonstrates that exposure to thimerosal can cause a genetically predisposed child to develop autism. Thimerosal contains mercury, a potent neurotoxin. Some children are less able to excrete mercury and are therefore at greater risk of being injured by exposure at low levels of mercury. And thimerosal in vaccines causes motor and language tics. The evidence will also demonstrate that MMR vaccination can cause a genetically predisposed child to develop autism. The measles virus causes acute and chronic neurologic illness. Mild or subclinical measles infection can cause neurologic illness. That is to say that the presence or severity of neurologic illness is not related to the severity of the rash or fever a child suffers as a result of measles. Measles RNA has been found in biopsies taken from the gut and the cerebrospinal fluid of children with autism, both the lab in Ireland, in the Unigenetics lab, and by a lab here in the United States at Wake Forest University. The measles virus probably causes or triggers the chronic intestinal inflammation in most children that develop autism and chronic bowel inflammation within 6 months of MMR vaccination. And that last statement is based primarily on the testimony of Dr. Krigsman from the Cedillo hearing. We have in this case evidence about the specific symptoms of Yates's gastrointestinal compliance. The evidence also demonstrates that inflammation in the gut can cause inflammation in the brain, and therefore neurologic symptoms and neurologic illness. And the neurologic symptoms of inflammatory bowel disease and neurologic symptoms of celiac disease, such as ataxia and other neurologic symptoms or indicia of this relationship between inflammation in the intestines and the brain. Together, the facts specific to Yates-Hazelhurst illness and the medical testimony about thimerosal and MMR vaccination in autism provide a reliable medical theory causally connecting the vaccinations to Yates' regressive autism. They provide a logical sequence of cause and effect, showing the vaccinations were the cause of his regressive autism. And they provide a showing of a proximal temporal relationship between vaccination and injury. In the broader context, as a test case, Yates-Hazelhurst case provides a reliable set of criteria which the court can apply to determining which children with autism were injured by thimerosal and or the MMR vaccine. One thing that sets the Hazelhurst case apart from the other two test cases is we do not have a Yates-Hazelhurst-specific identification of RNA in the intestines of the cerebral spinal fluid. We believe that clinical indicia of vaccine-related autism is sufficient, and we hope to provide kind of criteria that the court could apply to other in other cases in which the children were not able to have the samples tested. Thank you.
Thank you. Respondents, counsel, please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Your Honor. Vince Matanowski for the United States. First, I'd apologize that I have to sit while addressing you. I far prefer and more comfortable if I were to be able to speak while addressing you, ma'am. But as you know, we're forced by the technology here to be sitting when addressing you. This Hazelhurst case has been designated as a test case. That is, it's supposed to serve as a paradigm under the PSC's profession that this is supposed to serve as a paradigm for a majority of other cases that are currently pending before you and the other two special masters. Now, it's curious that this case as a paradigm offers no cohesive theory of cause and effect, not a cohesive theory of cause and effect as to how a combination of thimerosal-containing vaccines and MMR would cause autism, or how either thimerosal-containing vaccines or MMR singly would cause autism. Rather, what you've been presented with is a series of hypotheses that have been put forward by those who seek to implicate vaccines in as a cause of autism. These hypotheses have been unsupported and unproven. The testimony that you're going to hear from Dr. Corbier is going to essentially recount these hypotheses. That there's been a rise in the incidence of autism that's unexplained, that the hypothesis that mercury accumulates in a special category of genetically susceptible children, another unsupported claim, that somehow the measles virus creates inflammation in the gut, and that that inflammation in turn creates some sort of problem in the brain that in turn leads to autism. Again, a hypothesis that's unsupported. Finally, what you're going to hear from Dr. Corbier is that thimerosal-containing vaccines and MMR are simply one amongst other contributing factors, is a cause of autism. You are going to be left with no theory, no cohesive theory that you could apply to this case or any other that it's supposed to be, serve as a paradigm for. Regardless of whether there's a cohesive theory articulated, you've already heard evidence by virtue of the Cedillo case that discounts and disproves each of these hypotheses in their several parts. Moreover, you're about to hear expert testimony from respondents' experts that's going to again reveal that those hypotheses are unsupported. They're essentially simply uninformed speculation without any basis in reliable science. You'll also hear that in the factual context of this case, there's no basis for a finding that Yates-Hazlehurst's autism is either caused by the thimerosal-containing vaccines or the MMR vaccine, singly or in concert. The bases of Dr. Corbier's opinion will be removed one by one. First, Yates had no immune impairments, either before or at the time he received his vaccinations, or at the time that his autism manifested itself. There's no clinical or diagnostic evidence to support the claim of immune impairment. Second, there was no medical contraindication to administering the vaccines at the time he was ill, Yates was ill. The pediatrician isn't to blame for Yates' autism. Third, the timing of Yates' autistic symptoms, whether they first appeared at 12 months or 18 months, has no bearing at all on the cause of his autism. His clinical course, including the timing of his symptoms and the symptoms themselves, are precisely the type, they're no different than the type of symptoms and the timing of symptoms you'll see in regressive autism cases, regardless of vaccination status. Fourth, there is no evidence of inflammatory bowel disease in this case. Autistic enterocolitis is not a recognized disease entity. Rather, it's a fiction that's been initiated by Andrew Wakefield and perpetuated by him and his collaborators. Finally, you're going to hear you'll find that Dr. Corbier has no support for his claim that thimerosal-containing vaccines have any role in the causation of autism. They do not impair immune systems, and there's no basis for concluding that thimerosal in the amount received in vaccinations causes autism. I started by observing that what you're going to hear from the petitioners is simply a review of the various hypotheses that have been put forward by those who seek to implicate vaccines as a cause of autism. It's appropriate to end my comments on a further observation. Dr. Corbier separated what he called the conventional view from hypotheses that he champions. On one hand, he says there's the conventional view, and on the other hand, he says there are hypotheses. The conventional view, what he calls the conventional view, is the view shared by the majority of scientists, clinicians, and other medical professionals who research and treat autism. He contrasts that view with what he terms our, quote, parental hypotheses. Now, you were charged under law with deciding this case based on reliable science. That's the mandate provided by the Supreme Court in Daubert. I ask you, could parental hypotheses possibly provide that scientific basis for deciding this case? Aren't such unverified guesses the very pseudoscience banned from this courtroom? Even apart from the legal strictures that bind you in making this decision, common sense dictates that complex medical questions of causation, they must be decided on reputable, reliable science, the science that Dr. Corbier calls a conventional view. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Webb.
We'll call our first witness. And the first witness will be Angela Hazelhurst. And at this time, I'll ask the additional witnesses that are in the courtroom to step out.
Thank you.
That'll be Pam and Mr. Hazelhurst.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Could you give us your name and address for the record, please?
Let's see if I can see that. Is this chair move? Oh, okay. Angela Hughes Hazelhurst, address 102 Woodhaven Drive, Jackson, Tennessee 38301.
Now, you'll need to remember to keep your voice up, okay, both for the recording and for my benefit, because my hearing aid doesn't seem to be working today. And also, when you answer questions, about yes or no questions, make sure you say yes or no, because the recording doesn't pick up nods and shaking of the head.
Okay.
Gestures. Are you Yates Hazelhurst's mother?
I am.
I'd like to begin by talking about Yates's current condition, his strengths and weaknesses, and how autism affects him. Will you describe Yates' current language development?
Yates can currently express needs. For example, he can say, I want juice. I want chip. I want to go bye-bye. The longest sentence that Yates can express is about 5 words. However, he can express what he did for the day. I can't ask Yates, what did you do today? And he could not recall that language. I would describe his language as expressively very delayed and receptively delayed as well.
Is when Yates says something, typically how long is the sentence?
His first initial response is usually 1 to 2 words with prompting, or I can hold an object away from him. We can usually get him up to 5 or 6 words in a sentence.
So give us an example of the typical first try from Yates.
Mommy, go bed. Go bed. And I might prompt him, Mommy, can I go to bed, please?
Do you have any idea of how many words he knows?
Yates can identify probably over 100 items if you were to present a prompt and show him, but his meaningful speech is not there.
So he uses fewer words than he can actually identify.
Correct. But no, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry?
He doesn't actually use the words that he can identify. He can just identify if shown a photo or an actual object.
Can he follow simple instructions?
Yates can follow two-step directions, certainly one-step and sometimes two-step directions. For example, I might say, Yates, go get Mommy's shoe and bring it back to me. He could do that if I pointed and prompted him to do so.
How does Yates interact with you and his father and his sister?
Yates tolerates his sister. He knows that she's there. If she were to hug him, he would not engage, but he might look at her and just be there. Yates interacts with Rolf and I in a more need basis. For example, he is affectionate. He will sit in our laps, but his communication with us is more to express his needs of if he's hungry, if he wants to go bye-bye, if he wants to take a bath.
Does Yates play?
Yates, I would not consider it play like I see with typical children. He can work a puzzle if it's presented, but as far as play, I can't think of a toy in our house that Yates typically, or would you call typical play. He might spin a CD or spin a toy, but I wouldn't necessarily consider it play.
How does he interact, or does he interact with other children?
Yates does not typically interact with other children.
What other challenges, does Yates present because of his autism?
Yates is very hyperactive, and there are times when he might run away. He's a child that we call it the Fort Hazelhurst home because there's deadbolts on every door so that he won't be able to get out. If he would, he would be across town or across the street. So we have to watch Yates 24/7, and even if we're in the home with him, if 10 to 15 minutes go by, where's Yates? We've got to find Yates. What's Yates doing? Because if it's quiet, you know Yates is into something, or there's a sink running upstairs, or a flood is about to occur in the house, or something's about to go wrong.
Does that represent a problem for the school as well?
Not so much for the school. I think Yates' behavior is probably more severe at home, but at school, he has a full-time aide that is with him the entire time he is at school.
Tell us a little bit about Yates' school program. What kind of classroom is he in?
Yates is in a special education classroom. There are approximately 6 children in this classroom. I would consider Yates the most severe. It's supposed to be a model ABA classroom. However, last year that did not come into fruition. So they are flying, the school system is actually flying an ABA expert from California to train the classroom for this upcoming year to be a model ABA classroom. And ABA is Applied Behavior Analysis, which is a...
You said several times, ABA?
ABA, Applied Behavior Analysis.
Does Yates engage in self-stimulatory behaviors?
Yes, and very frequently. Yates is constantly trying to find some object in the home, especially many CDs have been ruined. Yates likes to spin CDs. He the one thing he will do is watch Thomas Train. And I think he stems upon the movement of the songs and the train. He flaps. He loves to stem with water or watching the water go down the tub or the sinks.
I forgot to ask you about the school. What kind of material, what kind of skills are they working on in this classroom?
Right now, they're just trying to meet goals until the new ABA specialist in the program comes in. I know they're just working on basic coloring and trying to speech therapy and trying to get Yates to play more motor skills, to talk more.
How are Yates's gross motor skills, walking, running, climbing steps? Things like that.
At one point, Yates had lost almost complete motor skills. And at this point, he can ride a big wheel. He can catch a large ball and throw it back. He can run. It's with an odd gait. He doesn't run like a typical little boy. There's just something odd about the gait of his walk and his run. I would consider Yates's motor skills delayed, and because of his communication or lack of, obviously would not be able to participate in any kind of structured sport.
How about fine motor skills, coloring?
Fine motor skills, actually, were once considered one of Yates's strengths, but he still has trouble coloring within the lines. It looks a little more like scribble. He can write his name. It is legible, but it's nowhere near the strength of my 5-year-old who writes her name.
Can he feed himself?
Yates can feed himself. He's left-handed. He does a nice job. He's a little messy sometimes, but he can do that.
How about dress himself?
Yates does not dress himself. He can dress with assistance. If we, for example, if we get him started, he can kind of finish. If we put the shirt over the head, he can put his hands through. But he does not do that on his. He does not initiate dressing himself.
Is Yates on any medication? And if so, what kind of medication?
Yates is on 2 antipsychotic medications, risperidol and Remeron. And we're thankful without those, Yates would not sleep. So. He, with the aid of these medications, he can at least sleep lightly. He's also on digestive enzymes that were prescribed by Dr. Bowie, and I'm thankful for those. Without the digestive enzymes, he would not be able to absorb his food. At one point, Yates looked like what you would consider an Ethiopian. His stomach was very distended, and you can see his ribs, and I'm thankful for the digestion that he has now, because I no longer fear that Yates will die. There was a point where he looked like he would starve to death and die.
And is he on any other medication for his gastrointestinal problems in addition to the enzymes?
Yes, he's on pancreatic enzymes. I think they're MT16, I believe I'm saying that correctly. He's also on Pentasa, and he's also on Omeprazole, which is generic for something like Prilosec.
Does Yates receive any other medication?
He also receives daily sub-Q Lupron injections, as well as Lupron intramuscular injections twice a month.
And what's the purpose of that?
The purpose of that, Yates has high testosterone levels that were not appropriate for his age. It made sense of some of his aggressive and out of control behavior since the Lupron injections. Yates has been a much calmer little boy, and there's been more of a connection with Yates.
And who's the doctor that prescribes that medication?
That's Dr. Mark Geyer.
What are some of Yates' strengths?
Yates is potty trained. He is affectionate to Rolf and I. He recently learned to do an Eskimo kiss. Yates continues to make progress.
Does he like school?
He likes school. He seems happy at school. Another strength, again, to go back to, he's not self-limiting with his diet. He seems to have a pretty happy and healthy appetite at this point. And the sleep has been such a huge strength for Yates and for our family.
How's his general health now?
I think with the aid of all the medications, the changes in the diet, again, I go back to the fear of his death. I feel that Yates is, in general, a lot more healthy.
I'd like to talk about Yates' first year now. What was Yates' first year like?
Yates was born February 11th with Apgar scores of 8 and 9. He was just the light of our lives, our first child. We brought him home, and he had what I would consider a typical colic for 6 weeks. That was resolved, and by 9 weeks, Yates was sleeping through the night. Within the first month of Yates' life, he smiled. He later went on to laugh and goo. He rolled over appropriately. Around 6.5 months, Yates sat up. He played with appropriate toys. I remember blocks and a little alligator music. I can't remember, a xylophone. Oops, I can't remember what it's called. You play it. He had that. He crawled at 7 months. At 11 months, he walked. And my mother used to say that Yates would light up a room because he smiled so big. He was the most joyful child, and that can be seen in a 6-month christening picture photo. He just had this enormous ability to light up a room.
Can you tell us a little bit about his speech development during his first year of life?
What I recall is specifically, I can remember Christmas the most because it was just such a joyful occasion. Around Christmas in December, Yates was saying peas in reference to please, thank you, juice, bye-bye, da-da, patty cake. December 5th, I remember being a little concerned because he was saying all these words before he said mama. But on December 5th, 2000, he said mama.
Did he say mama or dada first?
He said dada first. I just wrote the December 5th down because that was important to me.
How did Yates use those words you've described?
Very appropriately. It was very meaningful speech. If he said please, it was appropriate in that he wanted something. If he said thank you, it was appropriate in that something was given to him. And if he said bye-bye, it was, he knew we were going bye-bye. And he would wave his little hand.
What was Yates' play like during his first year?
Yates' play, and I can only compare it to my second child, who's typical, was very similar, actually more advanced than her play. He would play with the ball. He would bring toys to you to play. He would bring books. He would play with his cousins, and they would chase and laugh. And they would play peekaboo. It was a very appropriate and meaningful play. He was starting, he imitated very, very well. For example, Yates got a drum for Christmas, and if I took the drum and went boom, 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 Yates would imitate boom, boom, boom. Or if I looked at Yates and made a silly noise like, ah, boo, 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 he would go, ah, boo, boo, he would imitate that interaction. And around January, Yates had, well, for Christmas, Yates had gotten a blue car, a little police car that you put your feet in and you go. And I can remember him playing in that car, and he was obviously imitating Mommy on her cell phone, because he went and got a cell phone and got in his car, and he put his phone up to his ear, and he was driving around talking on the telephone in his little blue car. So I think that was the beginning of what we would call pretend play, an imitation.
How did he interact with you and your husband and your extended family during that first year?
He was a very loving and expressive child. He interacted. I remember in the mornings, he would be waiting for us in his crib, smiling with his arms stretched out, ready to be picked up. He interacted beautifully with Rolf's mother. She was probably one person who kept Yates the most, and they had a very, very deep connection early on, and they played very well together. And he interacted. The cousins would love to play with Yates, and if Yates was not at the grandmother's house when they were there, they would be deeply disappointed because they had so much fun playing peekaboo and rolling. They would all sit in a circle and spread their legs and roll the ball between each other. And Yates was able to communicate and roll the ball back and forth.
Did he share things with you and others?
In the first year?
Yeah.
I would, you know, that was a little early for sharing, but he would give things back and forth, if that's considered sharing.
Would he bring you a toy, for example?
Yes, absolutely. He would bring books and toys, whatever Yates wanted to play with at the moment.
Let's talk briefly about the doctor's visit and the vaccinations on February 8, 2001. What brought Yates to the doctor that day?
Yates had been sick for 2 weeks with a fever, and I remember it being somewhat of a high fever, and it wasn't a documented visit. We came in because Yates had been sick for 2 weeks. On that day, Yates was prescribed penicillin and diagnosed with a bilateral ear infection.
Who brought Yates to the doctor that day?
I brought Yates with my cousin, Miss Tammy McCoy.
Now, did the doctor also give vaccinations at that visit?
Yes, he did give Yates several vaccines that day. We questioned the nurse as to whether Yates should be vaccinated because he had been so ill and was also prescribed an antibiotic at the same time. And we were told that it was fine.
How was Yates the rest of that week after the vaccination?
The vaccinations were February 8th. February 11th was Yates' birthday party. In looking at the video, Yates seems still somewhat typical, but very dazed. Not the same, just kind of dazed.
And how about the second week after the vaccinations? How was it?
Somewhere around 12 days after the vaccinations, Rolf and I were very concerned because Yates broke out in a rash of tiny red whelps. Rolf immediately called the clinic because we were concerned. We were told by the physician on call who did not see Yates or treat Yates that it was a reaction to the penicillin, although he had already been on it for 12 days. So instead of seeing Yates, they switched him to another antibiotic altogether.
I'm not sure I know what tiny whelps mean. A welt. Could you describe the rash in a little bit more detail?
Just tiny red dots, welts. They were red on his body.
Where were the dots?
I remember them more so on his torso.
Mm-hmm. How long did the rash last?
Curtis, that I don't remember.
Did there come a time when the behavior you've described during Yates' first year changed?
In retrospect, looking back, Yates' behavior significantly changed in March of 2001.
And in what way did they change? Did his behavior change?
He suddenly became very hyperactive, difficult to take places. You had to constantly watch Yates. Between March and April would have been Easter. Because it was a holiday, I specifically remember certain events of that day as well.
Could you describe that in a little bit more detail?
Sure. Just in the previous months, we had had Yates' picture taken at Christmas, and he jolly, gladly set up for a beautiful Christmas photo and I could put him on my hip, or I could hold him, or he could sit in my lap, and there wasn't a problem. He was just content. By Easter, we were concerned of even leaving Yates in the nursery just because he just didn't seem to be quite as consoled. And after church, we went to the front altar to have photos made, and my little boy that weren't set in my lap, he just wanted to run. And you can see in those photos, we're actually holding him down to get a photo.
Did the way he interacted with you change at that time as well?
At some point in that spring, that I felt, gosh, Yates just doesn't seem to be into me. And I made a note of it, and I thought, well, maybe it's because he's sickly. He seems sick, and he's walking now. And I'd been told little boys, when they walk, they're busy, and that's normal behavior. And but I felt something in my heart that he's not into me right now. What's some, you know, is this typical behavior? And kind of blew it off as, oh, he's a boy.
Did he sometimes get away from you and your husband or other people that were caring for him?
He actually had mentioned that it got difficult to go to church. There was one Sunday Yates was in the nursery, and he actually did get away from the nursery, and they had to put out a red alert, or they found him across the church in the preacher's office having a big time.
How long did this behavior where he was trying to get away from people last?
It started then, and gosh, it's still today, to some degree.
Were there any other changes in Yates' behavior or developmental skills in 2001?
By the midsummer, end of summer, Yates had lost all meaningful speech. Bye-bye, Mama, patty cake, please, thank you, were gone. And they were replaced with unmeaningful speech, such as an obsession with numbers and letters.
Yeah. When did this happen?
Sometime between early spring. It was a gradual change, but early spring to end of summer, Yates lost meaningful speech.
Were there any changes in Yates' health in 2001?
Can specifically pinpoint a trip to Norway the end of June. Just to go back to the hyperactivity, and I'll go on to explain the other behaviors that are the other conditions that changed. Yates was so wild and hyper that we had to purchase a harness to keep him with us. So on this trip, there's photos, and Yates is always in a harness because he would run so wildly. During this time, because we were on vacation and not home, I have specific memories of diarrhea. We could not purchase enough diapers in Norway. There were also a few screaming episodes in Norway where Yates was inconsolable. I remember also the flight home from Norway. We were on a long flight, and the lady in front of us was so annoyed, and I couldn't figure out why she was so annoyed. Yates was kicking the seat in front of her. He was so out of control on this 9 or 10 hour flight, and Rolf and I were just helpless. We didn't know what to do, and people around us, I could tell, were very agitated, but I thought there was something wrong with them, not me or Yates, by any means. Then the trip, we flew in from Norway to Boston, and from Boston to Memphis, Yates had a very explosive diaper on that trip because it soiled his clothes, and we, again, were out of diapers. And I just remember this because there was a little girl on the plane, and we had to borrow a little girl pink pull-up, and we laughed about it, but those are the specific memories of Yates's gastrointestinal diarrhea that began.
How long does his diarrhea last?
Yates's diarrhea, sometime in June of 01, we made some dietary changes. And those changes helped somewhat with the diarrhea. I would say the diarrhea continued up until we saw Dr. Bowie, which is why we went to see Dr. Bowie, was because we were concerned of the distended gut and the diarrhea. And it was up until that point medications were prescribed. But it wasn't until 2004 or sometime around in there that we became very consistent with Pentasa, the pancreatic enzymes, the omeprazole, that Yates finally, I would say the majority of the time now, has somewhat of solid stools.
Now, those dietary changes, were they made when?
Initially, in June of 01, we began a gluten-free, casein-free diet.
2001?
So
at the time of the Norway trip?
I'm sorry, 2002. I'm sorry, June of 2002. It was after Yates' diagnosis. Apologize.
So those were dietary changes would have been made at about the time he was diagnosed?
Probably 3 to 4 weeks after diagnosis.
Diagnosis
of autism. It was in June of 2002.
Did Yates' play change as well in 2001?
Yates' play in 2001 consisted of an obsession with letters and numbers. He no longer really played with, if he did play with toys, it was inappropriate play. For example, in the summer, if he went to his cousin's house, his form of play was to turn their baby doll strollers over and spin the wheels. And his form of play at home was to maybe line things up or consistently build blocks, but it wasn't his social play. His interaction with his cousins began to significantly deteriorate.
Do you know when this change in play began?
I would have to go back. It pretty much goes back to the spring of 2001 when he just wanted to run.
In spring of 2001, when Yates began to be less interested in you and became extremely hyperactive, what did you think?
I thought there was something wrong with me. I thought I was a bad mother because I was so tired and I didn't understand why my sister-in-law, my friends who had children, they just seemed to have it together. And they seemed to go to parties and have fun, and we couldn't go places without me being stressed to the limit, and I thought there was something wrong with me.
I'm sorry this is difficult. You're doing well. When Yates' speech became all numbers and letters, what did you think?
We thought our little boy was a genius. We were so proud, and friends would come over and they would say, "Angela, my child can't do that, and they're 3 years old, and Yates is 1.5. He's a genius." And we were able to kind of look past the social we just thought, Yates is going to find the cure for cancer. He's so smart.
Did you report the hyperactivity or the change in Yates' speech to his pediatrician at Yates' 18-month checkup in August?
The pediatrician asked how many words Yates had. I don't remember how I might have expressed it, but I did agree that Yates had 4 to 10 words. It wasn't the initial words, but he did have 4 to 10 words. It was just letters and numbers, and I may have expressed how smart I thought Yates was at that visit.
Did you report that Yates had diarrhea?
Yes, actually, I believe I reported several concerns regarding Yates's. He had chronic lymph node. His lymph nodes were swollen, and I reported that I had a concern with that, as well as I believe his gastrointestinal system. And I think it was reported in that he had loose stools.
When did you begin to worry that the changes you've described, the extreme hyperactivity, the change in speech, and the change in play, might be a problem?
By September and October, my sister-in-law pulled me to the side and questioned Yates' behavior, and that maybe we needed parenting classes because Yates was so out of control, and obviously it didn't appear to have any type of discipline. And she also mentioned a condition called dyslexia, which is a fascination with numbers and letters. And she, you know, and I had another friend who mentioned Asperger's, and that's probably the first time maybe some thought crossed my mind, but my initial reaction was, there may be something wrong with you, but not my baby, perfect little boy.
Did anything specific happen that finally made you feel like you needed to have a doctor address these changes that had occurred?
By January, I was really starting to feel in my gut, this is not right. And I began to look at other children Yates's age, and I began wondering, Yates stopped answering to his name, and my first intuition was something's not right. Yates is a genius, but Yates can't hear. Of course, I had the health concerns that I had shared with the physician as well about Yates's immune system. That had been talked about as well. So by February, when it was time for Yates's 2-year checkup, I knew in my heart I could not deny this one more minute that something was terribly, terribly wrong.
When do you believe that Yates' impairment was most severe?
From March to June, the lights were off.
In which year?
Of 2002. Okay. He would not respond to anyone. He would not respond to his name. He did not appear to recognize me or Rolf. He cried a lot. He would sit in one spot for hours and stack toys as if he were playing, but he would scream at the same time. I remember putting him in a swing and pushing him, singing to him, and just, "Yates, look at me, please look at me." And he was, it was like the sparkle in his eye was gone.
At that time, was he sleeping at all?
That was, I believe, around the point where we were having great difficulty with Yates at night.
Now, did he still have diarrhea at that time?
During those 3 months of the worst?
Yeah.
Yes.
Apart from the diarrhea, were there other things that made you think that his stomach or his intestines or otherwise were not well?
The thing that I remember, and we have photos of Yates' stomach so distended, and it just thought he was going to waste away. It was characterized, I think, at Pfeiffer Clinic as malabsorption. And I can remember him being in the bathtub, and I was so scared because I could see his ribs all the way down, and his little legs got skinny, and I was very scared.
Since 2002, have medication or therapy seemed to help Yates?
Yes.
Could you tell us some of the things that you've done or medications he's received that have made a difference for him?
Okay. Rolf and I have gone to the end of the world to help Yates, and tried many, many, many things. The things that the medications and therapies that stick out to me the most that have helped Yates have been the gluten-free, casein-free diet, the applied behavior analysis therapy, the one-on-one, speech therapy. Again, without the aid of the antipsychotic drugs of risperidone and Remeron and also melatonin, Yates would not be sleeping. The gastrointestinal digestive enzymes, the Pentasa used for gastrointestinal inflammation, and the omeprazole have helped tremendously in somewhat of the healing, I hope, of his intestines. And I still don't think we're 100% there. And the Lupron has helped tremendously with some of the hyperactivity and some of the aggressive behaviors seen by Yates.
What kind of ultimate progress do you hope Yates can make?
Yates is so restricted with his language. It's almost like he's trapped. He's a 2-year-old trapped in a 7-year-old body. One day, I want to have a conversation with my little boy.
Do you have any idea when this might happen?
No.
That's all the questions I have.
Good morning, Mrs. Sandlers.
Good morning.
My name is Lynn Riccadella, and I'm one of the counselors who responded. And I really don't have that many questions for you today, but before I do start, I want to say the same thing to you that I said to Mrs. Cedillo, and it's vitally important that everybody here at council table knows how much you, your husband, and your whole family have done for Yates. It is readily apparent in the medical records, in the videotapes we watched, through your testimony today. I think you said you've gone to the ends of the earth, and it's apparent. And you, your husband, and your family should be commended for it. And that's one of the most important things we'll say here today. I just have a few questions. You wrote an affidavit in this case dated August 28th of 2007. Do you recall that?
Yeah, somewhat, yes.
Sure. And for the record, I'm referring to Petitioner's Exhibit 28. And in paragraph 8 of that affidavit, you state that sometime after February 8th of 2001, it was still the winter. You remember feeling that Yates wasn't interacting with you and your husband as he had previously. And I believe today you said you thought it was around March of 2001. Is that correct?
Somewhere after vaccination spring.
Okay. And you say that he also became very busy and hyper, and I think that was reflected in your testimony this morning. When was the first time, and you may have said this in your direct, and I apologize if I didn't hear it, when was the first time that you reported your concerns about his behavior and development to a healthcare professional?
The first time I reported the concern with development?
You said his lack of interaction and his hyperactivity.
Correct. That would have been February, I'm sorry, that would have, the two-year checkup in 2002.
Oh, 2 years, okay. And what did you tell, who did you report it to?
Dr. Carlton Hayes.
And what did you tell him?
I believe I expressed concerns with Yates's immune system as well as concerns of his speech not progressing.
Getting over sickness and the cough. And you also, in your affidavit, at paragraph 22, you stated that just before your trip to Norway in June of 2001, he became, and this is what you say, a picky eater?
Yes.
What did you mean by that?
Yates had self-limited at that point himself to the three foods I remember the most: Cheetos, hot dogs, peanut butter, and almost an obsession with milk. The memory I have in Norway was not only could we not find diapers, we could not find enough milk. And we constantly, on that trip, even though maybe he shouldn't have been on a bottle, we were constantly finding milk to put in the bottle to help console Yates.
And you also say in your affidavit that during the trip to Norway, Yates began to have diarrhea. Is that correct?
That's the first time that, only simply because it's an occasion, it's easier to remember when you're not at home. But that was the first time I recall diarrhea. And again, there are other instances when we were not at home that I recall diarrhea simply because we weren't at home.
And you mentioned that you went to see Dr. Bowie. He's in Boston, is that correct?
Correct.
And he's a pediatric gastroenterologist?
Yes, he's board-certified pediatric neurologist.
Correct.
Gastroenterologist.
Why did you go to see Dr. Bowie?
That is, it's actually quite a story. My husband can probably share this a little bit better. My father-in-law is a gastroenterologist, a board-certified gastroenterologist. He has done training in England. Dr. Hazelhurst contacted Dr. Christopher, can't remember his last name, Christopher Wells maybe, something like that, and wanted to know who is the best gastroenterologist in the United States because I want my grandson there. And the names that were given, I can't remember how many, but Dr. Timothy Bowie was one of the top names given. At that point, my father-in-law pleaded with Dr. Tim Bowie and wrote a very nice letter urging and begging Dr. Bowie to help his grandson.
Were you also in contact with a Dr. Simon Murch in England?
I have not been in contact with Dr. Simon Murch, no. Although that may have been someone my father-in-law could have contacted too. But I'm not for sure.
And that you mentioned that you, that Yates is currently being treated by Dr. Mark Geyer, is that correct?
That is correct.
And how were you put in touch with Dr. Geyer?
Let's see. Rolf and I first met Dr. Geyer at an Autism One conference. We had also read some of Dr. Geyer's publications that have been published in famous and reputable journals. So we had read some of his data. We actually began treatment with Dr. Geyer. I can't explain this correctly. There's another family in Jackson, Tennessee that was being treated by Dr. Geyer, and their son was making remarkable progress. And after speaking with the mother, we began to research the protocol, the significant improvements that the children under Dr. Geyer's care were making, and decided at that point to contact Dr. Geyer to interview to see if Yates might be a candidate for their treatment, and Yates was indeed a candidate.
Does Dr. Geyer charge for his services?
Very minimal.
Do you know how much he charges?
The only charge that Dr. Geyer has charged for us have been for phone consults, and I don't think they've ever been over $100.
Has he personally seen Yates?
He has not personally seen Yates.
Has Dr. Bowie seen Yates more than that one time in April of 2003?
No, we have continued treatment with Dr. Bowie through phone consults.
Has Yates ever seen a pediatric gastroenterologist in Tennessee?
No.
And the records reflect that at one point you were trying to get Yates to be seen by Dr. Arthur Kriegsman. Did that ever come to fruition?
That did not.
Okay. I have no further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't have any further questions.
No, it was consistent temper tantrums at this point, and it was so hard to figure out, is my baby in pain? Is this a tantrum? And looking back and learning what we found out about the gastrointestinal system, I could say that the tantrums and the consistent screaming would probably be a combination of both. But there were behaviors during this time that were very odd. Yates would roll over on the couch. We didn't understand why he would do that, but it was actually it's, you know, the arm of a couch, and you can roll over and put pressure on your stomach. Yates did that quite often.
Any further questions? Not for me.
Can I thank the court for allowing us to share our story today, and also the people at home who are keeping our children while we're away, and to Rolf's parents and Tammy McCoy for their generosity and lifelong work for us to be here. We appreciate it. We just wanted to say thank you.
We'll call Ann Gerard, if I might step out. And,
anyway.
Could you give us your name and address for the record, please?
Ann Hazelhurst Girard, 37 Northwood Avenue, Jackson, Tennessee, 38301.
Are you Yates Hazelhurst's aunt?
Yes, I am.
You're Rolf Hazelhurst's sister?
That's right.
Big sister or little sister?
Big sister.
Do you have any children?
I have three girls.
And what are their names?
Ann Elizabeth, Mary Caroline, and Eleanor.
And how old were your girls when Yates was born?
The third one was not born, but the other two were 2 and 3 and a half.
Did you and your girls see a lot of Yates during his first year of life?
We did. We lived about 5 minutes apart. We saw him frequently from the time he was a newborn. My girls just loved to be with him. He was like a baby doll to them. Frequently, we would just be in town, just driving by. Let's go see Yates. Let's go see Yates. So, you know, we saw him. You know, couldn't put a number on it, but he was just part of the family, and we saw him all the time.
Can you estimate how often? I mean, how many days would you have been there?
Several days, probably 5 out of 7, sometimes twice a day. You know, and then you might go a week, you didn't see him, but, you know, we saw him very frequently. Uh-huh.
Did your girls play with Yates?
They did. They, from the time that he was just even an infant, I want to hold him. They, you know, would start interacting with him very young and, like I said, treated him like it was their own baby doll. They, even when he was little, you know, gave him a bottle. Then as he got a little older, we'd put a little thing to support him. He would sit up with them, play, just be right there in his face. He would, you know, interact, just, you know, do what a baby does. And then as he got a little older, crawl around on the floor, you know, play chase, just did everything you could do with a baby, they did, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because not all of us have had babies as recently as you have. What kind of things did Yates interact with your girls as well as your girls enjoying him?
Absolutely. When he got a little bit older, obviously he knew who they were. When he would see them, they had a long hallway, and at the end of the hall was his bedroom, and there was his baby bed. And you'd see him walking down the hall, and if he was in his crib, he'd stand up and just start jumping up and down with excitement. There were his cousins, you know, put his arms out. We'd get him out, sit on the floor. You know, if you sit, as he got a little older, old enough to sit up and interact, give Mary the ball. He'd give her the ball, you know, give this to Aunt Elizabeth. He knew who Aunt Elizabeth was and would give that to her. My girls couldn't read, but they would pretend to get the little hard books that are about this size and flip at the books. There's the dinosaur, you know, and he was very, you know, involved and intense in watching what they were doing. And and peekaboo was a big one. We could put a towel or a blanket, anything we had, over his head, and we'd say, "Where's Yates? Where's Yates?" And he'd pull that down. His face would light up. I mean, we could do this again and again and again. He just, and then he'd have my girls do it. He'd put it over their head, and we'd pull it down. So he was very much a part of playing with them.
When you were playing with the ball, and you said, "Give the ball to Mary Elizabeth," would he roll it to Mary Elizabeth?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, he would. Uh-huh. And then they would roll it back, and then we'd say, pass it to Aunt Ann, and he could pass it to me. So he, it often, if the ball rolled off, he would go get it, bring it back.
What was Christmas of 2000 like in connection with Yates and the way he was interacting with people?
Well, Christmas is, like any family, a big time, and our Christmas celebration is Christmas Eve, and with all the different cousins and everyone growing up and having their own children, there's probably 25 of us that get together Christmas Eve night, and someone dresses up like Santa Claus, and it is a wild, you know, it's just a lot of noise, a lot of, I want to hold Yates. I mean, he was passed around that night. The noise level was loud. Nothing seemed to bother him. He was just a happy, carefree baby with all the toys that were being opened. You know, he seemed to want to play with everybody. He just was in the center of everything and didn't seem to have care in the world. He was just a joy to be with. He really was. He was the youngest in the family, and we all love babies, so we especially enjoyed passing him around. And you know, he was the focal point, I guess, and he was fun to be with.
Can you describe any of the things that Yates and your girls did for play, say, in January of 2001?
By this time, he could stand up. They loved to see if they could teach him to walk. So we would all sit together and hold his hands, then let go, and he'd take some steps, a little bit fall down, take some steps some more. So at this age, he was, you know, he was even more fun because they could really interact with him. He had gotten a blue police car on Christmas Day, and one of them would drive, and they'd put him in the passenger seat, and they didn't have any furniture in the living room, so we'd go around in a circle, and then there was a little plastic phone that was in the car, and he would pick that up, and we'd say, oh, look, he's mimicking his mother talking on the phone. So he would just babble into the phone and talk and say hi. But he loved that car, and he had a little xylophone that he had gotten for Christmas, and they would hit that and play with that. And then in January, one day I remember it was snowing, and so we had to go share that with him too. So we came over and had a little snowsuit that my girls had outgrown, put it on him, went out in the front yard. There's the snow coming down. Girls showed him how to lay on the grass and make a snow angel. You know, pretend throwing snowballs very gently, playing in the snow. So that was a special day because it doesn't snow much in Tennessee, but we had to share that with him. And he did. We were out in the front yard.
This is a silly question because you've answered it, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Sure.
Did your girls enjoy playing with Yates?
Loved Yates. They did. I mean, they would ask, can we go to Yates' house? And when my mother would babysit my children, they would ask her, let's go to Yates' house. What's Yates doing? Let's go see Yates. So he was a vital part of their having fun. Probably one of their favorite people to play with. Really was, yeah.
Did Yates enjoy playing with your girls?
Yes, he did. He has the most beautiful smile, and you could tell when he was with them, it was just as much fun for him as it was for them. You know, I guess when you're little and somebody else little comes along, they're on their height, and he would light up. We'd say yay, and we had a real big time and looked forward and found every reason to go over there to play. And like I said, we would stop by unannounced often, just knocking on the door. What's Yates doing?
What do you remember about Yates' speech development during his first year of life?
Very normal. Said, die, and later associated that with my brother. I can remember him, bye-bye, you know, as we would leave. As they would leave our house, we would leave his house, bye-bye. Hi was the word. We're real big on please and thank you, both in my house and their house, and those were one of his first words. Didn't come out exactly please and thank you, but peas, thank you, juice. And we have a word for bottle that we started with my younger sister, and that stuck around. A bottle is a bubba, and that's all my children call it. So he referred to his bottle as bubba. But you knew what he wanted. You did. And he was able to come out with these words and knew what he wanted.
Did he use those words, like bye-bye when people were leaving? Or
yes.
Did he, the way
yes,
you'd
he
expect
used
someone?
Them appropriately. Yes, he did. Yes.
Before Yates' first birthday, did you ever think that Yates' behavior was unusual or abnormal?
It never, ever, ever crossed my mind. No, I did not. No, I thought he was just perfect little boy.
Did that change after his first birthday?
Absolutely. He went from being just a joy to see to just being a terror. It was like a three-ring circus when we were with him now. And, you know, everyone commented, oh, he's in the terrible twos. Well, he had just turned one. So that's kind of how he was labeled. I guess the word that was used to describe Yates was wild. Oh, he's just wild. And he just didn't want to be with the girls anymore. He just wanted to run. Not to go see anybody or not at a certain destination, but he would just take off. It wasn't a lot of fun to be with him anymore. Like you would have thought it should have been. Yeah, we were, why isn't Yates playing with me, is what my children would say. You know, Yates won't do this with me anymore. So.
When did this change occur?
It was definitely by March, because it's vivid in my mind because Easter was in April, and my mother had said, oh, let's all go to the country club for lunch after Easter, which is a hectic day anyway with Easter Bunny and getting ready for church, followed by that lunch. And I thought, I absolutely love my family, and we spend a lot of time together, but I did not want to spend that meal together. I knew we would be in a big dining hall, lots of other people around, and at that time, I had been with Yates enough over the past several weeks to know that he wasn't going to sit in his high chair. He was going to scream and just want to run around, and it would be disruptive, and he was going to call the scene, and I just wasn't up for it, and I just thought, oh, it's all right to do that at home, but I really don't want to go out in public. But we went ahead, and I couldn't tell my family that. Kept it to myself, and we went, and of course, my husband and I felt the same way, and we thought, oh, here we go. He's just going to run around the whole time and scream, and that's exactly what he did. We left there thinking, well, this is what we expected.
Did Yates' interest in toys change at the same time?
Yes, he didn't seem interested in toys at all, including swing sets, just normal, like when he would come to our house and my mother would babysit, oh, let's go see your cousins, and she would bring him over. We have a wonderful swing set, a slide, a playhouse that most children love to go see. All he wanted to do is just open and close the window. You know, most boys, when they learn they can climb in and out the window, that's what they would do. But he didn't want to play with anything in the backyard. He didn't want to play with anything in our playroom, which had plenty of toys in it, and the toys were everywhere and very accessible. All he wanted to do is, I remember saying, where's Yates? Where's Yates? He would find the door, out the door, and start running. And it was just this crazy run, not like a marathon runner. He was just, you know, he was just going with no destination. And you'd bring him back, and then you'd try to, here, let's play this, let's play this. And he had absolutely no interest interacting or playing with my children. And, you know, once again, we just thought, terrible twos. And I guess I kind of commented, and I remember my mother saying, well, he's a boy, and you've got two girls, and they're real sweet, and you don't know what it's like to raise a boy. But I just remember thinking, this is so odd that he will not play with anything that's put in front of him. The one thing that he did like to do when he came into our house is turn our little doll stroller upside down, and he'd take those wheels, and he'd just do this motion and want to spin those wheels. And then we had a little Scooby-Doo van, and he would turn that upside down. And he just wanted to spin those wheels. And that was, we thought, well, that's a strange thing to do with a toy, but that's what he enjoyed doing, so we let him do it.
Did your daughters notice this change in Yates?
Oh, yeah, and we're extremely disappointed. They could not understand why he might not want to play store with them. They had a cash register, a little cart for shopping. Come on, Yates, play with us. But he, and like I said, he had no interest in playing with what they had, none. And they encouraged it. They really did want him to play with them because that's what they had done for an entire year. And then now that he was older and could be even more fun, the playtime wasn't there.
What did you think about this change?
I just thought he was the most unruly child I'd ever been around. I kept it to myself for a while, and then when he would come over, I was pregnant with my third child, and very pregnant. They called me Big Mama because I was so large. And when I found myself running after him, you know, just with everything that I had, trying to go get him, I thought, this is wearing me out. This is not right for me to be chasing my nephew up the street when, you know, he could be playing. And then my other neighbors, we have a wonderful street, lots of young people, would come out, and they would be yelling for Yates. So everybody in the neighborhood, Yates, Yates. So I guess I talked about it amongst my neighbors, how, gosh, what can we do for him? He's just running wild. So I guess I talked about it with them, and then Angela was selling pharmaceuticals at the time, and her partner was a friend of mine, and she noticed Yates's irrational behavior. And so we talked about it amongst ourselves, and so there were just a few people. I just thought, I wonder why he acts like this. This is just not right. And so finally, after several months of it, and one incident in particular, I just kind of lost it and thought, I can't keep this to myself anymore. They're not going to have any friends because nobody's going to want to be around their child. People were now starting to talk about him. So I said to Angela one night, I said, y'all need some parenting classes. It was that bad, and my husband and I were going to something called Growing Kids God's Way, and I really thought that if they had some really good discipline, they could turn him around. I knew children weren't perfect, and mine sure weren't perfect, but I could communicate and say no to them. They knew what no meant, and they might rebel a little bit, but I knew with the right type of discipline, it could be turned around. And with Yates, when you said no to him, it's like he didn't even hear it. He just went on, and I thought, no, they need, you know, it took a lot for me to say, you need some parenting classes, because I'm extremely laid back. I'm non-confrontational. It took about 6 months of just seeing him go absolutely nuts. And just like I said, it's a three-ring circus when he was around. So that was kind of my breaking point, was the early. So it was like the first, I mean, I know the night, it was the first Thursday in September, and that's when I said, I can't keep it in any longer. People are noticing, and it's not just me that's noticing.
Oh, one. And you mentioned that he would come to your house and wanted to spin the wheels.
Yes.
When was that behavior? When did you observe that behavior?
That was probably more summertime. It really kicked up a notch later in the fall, but I started noticing it in the summer. Brand new baby on July the 10th, so I wasn't getting out as much. So my mom would bring him over, and Angela would come over and see Eleanor. And so to keep him entertained so he wouldn't run around, you know, that's what he did, is turn that pram over and just spin those wheels. And it was that same summer that I know we would go swimming at the country club, and had no interest in swimming, which that's okay. That's normal if a child doesn't want to swim, but didn't even want to walk around the pool like most of them do and, you know, have a snow cone or whatever. He would want to run to the parking lot and touch the wheels. And we all commented on how odd it was that he didn't do anything when he got to the car, but he just touched the top the wheel and did as many as he could. And my husband even commented that he's going to just wear your mother out. I mean, all my mother did is just, she was in motion all the time running after him, just Yates, Yates, and have his hand. And she just ran that parking lot with him while he touched all the wheels. which we found very odd. And my husband thought, your poor mother, this is just going to completely wear her out that he runs so much. And you could, if Yates wanted something, he would take your hand and he would walk you to it. I mean, run you to it. I mean, he just was always just in motion, and he would he was always leading somebody where he wanted to go.
Did you observe any change in Yates' speech in 2001?
Yes, I don't really remember him talking. There really was not much verbal conversation. Like I said, it was take the hand. If he wanted something in the refrigerator, he would walk you to the refrigerator. If he wanted something else, he would take you to it. He didn't really say what he wanted anymore. But one thing that really stuck out in my mind is that fall. It would have been maybe late August. I know early September, because my daughter was now, let's see, she was 2.5, and she was in play school. And is that right? Let me think. No, she was 2. She was now 3.5. She was now 3.5, and he was 1.5. And my mother would say, oh, what a genius, what a genius. He's so smart. Look, and if you took him somewhere and he saw a license plate, he would say XYQ134. And he would point to all the numbers of the license plate. And he was 1.5 years, and they were bragging on him. And I thought, well, yeah, he is really smart, because my 3.5 doesn't know these letters or these numbers, excuse me. And I thought, well, but she's normal. This is what my child, who was 2.5 years older than her, she developed the same way that the second child is. Why is it that Yates knows all these letters and numbers and my children didn't? So I found that extremely odd, and I thought, well, yes, he must be a genius, because this is not normal. But that was really all that he would do. You could dump an alphabet puzzle. He had a floor size, huge. He had a small one. They knew he liked that, so they kept him entertained with this puzzle. He would dump all of the 26 letters out. He would look at it for a split second, and he could just put them A to Z. And if one was upside down, turned around, immediately, it didn't matter. He was able just to put that in its correct spot. And I thought, there's no way my children could do that. We labeled him as a genius. And same thing with numbers. He could, identify all of his numbers the same way. But that was really his limit of, I guess, speech.
Do you have any recollection of him using the words that he had used before his first birthday, like please and thank you?
There was no please and thank you, or no hello or goodbye. No. Mm-mm.
That's all the questions I have.
Thank you.
You stay there for a moment.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
It's my first time.
We have no questions for this witness. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you. Sorry.
No worries.
Mrs. Odd Hazelhurst, Yates' grandmother, is our next witness.
Okay.
And we've been more efficient than I thought. I told her to be here at 11.
That is perfect. I think that will afford us perfect timing for a 15-minute break.
Right.
We are on the record.